Sri Sai Ram. The teachers and students of the Anantapur campus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning offer their loving salutations at the divine lotus feet of beloved Bhagavan. We present before you a puppet drama using doll puppets and human puppets. The directors of this puppet drama, the puppets, as well as the puppeteers themselves, extend a warm and hearty welcome to all who have gathered here today to witness the program. The world is a stage, and we are only actors in it. In the puppet show of this world, whose string puller is the Lord, all creatures, including human beings, are only dolls. It is He who directs the whole play, its thought and action. The puppet show is a folk form of art. It has all the ingredients of popular entertainment, such as drama, dance, music, and song. In our increasingly mechanized world, such folk forms of art as the puppet show are fast being replaced by the livelier cinema. Today, we are making a humble effort to revive this dying art that enhanced human culture once upon a time. As the Sanatana Sarathi, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, who is the divine embodiment of art, the lover and promoter of the arts, has always sought to revitalize the sources of our religious and spiritual life by restoring to culture and art forms their pristine purity. The Lord of Puttaparthi is a divine puppeteer, manipulating the world scene, pulling at our loosened moral joints and recharging the spiritual forces inside us. It is therefore to our beloved Bhagwan Baba that we gratefully offer our presentation. For the puppet show this evening, three stories have been chosen from the delightful collection of Chinnakathas told and retold by beloved Bhagwan on various occasions in his discourses. Each of these stories carries a beautiful message. Stringed together, the trinity of Chinnakathas form a garland of sorts and remind us of how Bhagwan wants us to lead our lives.
Begin with the first story. Once upon a time, there was a king.
A king who felt that if he knew the answers to three questions,
he would be able to lead a righteous life.
So, the king issued a decree throughout his kingdom.
According to the decree, whoever could answer the questions to the king's satisfaction would receive a reward.
Many people made their way to the palace, and each person gave a different answer.
Oh, wise people, assemble in my court. I hope you give me a satisfying answer to my first question. what was the best time to do any act.
Your Majesty, if you make a thorough timetable, a time schedule that allots certain tasks every hour, every day, every month, and every year, and follow it strictly, then you can hope to do every task at the right time.
I do not agree. How is it possible to plan every task in advance? Instead, O King, I suggest that you put aside all vain amusements and remain attentive to everything in order to know what to do at what time.
What are you saying? How is it possible for the king to have all the foresight and competence necessary to decide when to do each task? Your Highness, I think the best thing would be to set up a council of all the wise men of the kingdom and then act according to their advice.
If I may say so, certain urgent matters require an immediate decision. How can a king wait to consult the council of wise men? If, O king, you want to know in advance what is going to happen, you should consult the magicians and fortune tellers.
The king got terribly confused. He did not know what to do.
Is there anyone who can answer my second question? Who are the most important people to work with?
Your Majesty, you should put your trust in administrators.
No, you should rely on priests and monks.
In these warridden times, I think it is better to put one's faith in warriors.
What about physicians? O King, put all your trust upon physicians.
The king was even more confused.
Now, the third question. What is the most important task or act one needs to do at all times?
Science is the most important pursuit.
In my view, religion is the most important quest of man.
No, in my opinion, it is military prowess that should be man's chief concern.
The king was not pleased with any of the answers, and so no reward was given.
Everyone went away disappointed.
After several nights of reflection, the king resolved to visit a hermit who lived in the forest.
A very enlightened man.
Since the king knew that the hermit never left the forest and only received the poor,
refusing to have anything to do with persons of wealth and power,
he decided to go to the forest, disguised as a simple peasant. The king ordered his attendants to wait for him at the edge of the forest, while he ventured to go into the forest alone. When the king reached the hermit's dwelling place, he found the hermit intently digging a garden in front of his hut. When the hermit saw the stranger, he nodded his head in greeting and continued to dig. The hermit was an old man and was finding it difficult to labor so hard.
"I have come here to ask your help with three questions. What is the best time to do any act? Who are the most important people to work with? What is the most important act that one must do at all times?"
"You must be tired. Here, let me give you a hand with that."
"Thank you, sir. It is very kind of you."
After he had dug two rows, the king stopped, turned to the hermit and repeated his three questions.
"Dear sir, please tell me an answer to my three questions. What is the best time to do any act? Who are the most important people to work with? What is the most important act that one must do at all times?"
The hermit did not answer. Instead, he pointed to the spade and said,
"Why don't you rest now? I can take over again."
One hour passed, then two. Finally, the sun began to set.
"I came here to ask you if you could answer my three questions. A few hours have passed, but you have not given me any reply. If you can't give me any answer, please let me know. Then I can get on my way home."
"Do you hear someone coming towards the hermitage?"
The king and the hermit noticed that the man had received a deep wound. The king cleaned the wound thoroughly, dressed the wound several times till the bleeding stopped completely. At last, the wounded man regained consciousness and asked for a drink of water. The king brought him some water. The stranger fell off to sleep. So did the king. When he woke up in the morning with the sunrise, he realized he had forgotten where he was and what he had come for.
"Please forgive me,"
But what have you done that I should forgive you?
You do not know me, Your Majesty, but I know you. I was your sworn enemy, and I had vowed to take vengeance on you, since during the last war, you killed my brother and seized my property. When I heard that you were coming alone to the forest to meet the hermit, I resolved to surprise you on your way back to kill you. But instead of finding you, I came across your attendants who recognized me and gave me a mortal wound. Luckily, I escaped and ran to this place. If I had not met you, I would surely be dead by now. I had intended to kill you, but instead, you saved my life. I am ashamed of myself, and also grateful beyond words. If I live, I vow to be your servant for the rest of my life. And I will order my children and grandchildren to do the same. Please grant me your forgiveness.
I forgive you with all my heart, and I promise to return all your property to you. I will also send my own physician and servants to attend on you until you are completely healed. Oh, wise one, I will repeat my 3 questions one last time before I return to my palace. What is the best time to do any act? Who are the most important people to work with? What is the most important act that one must do at all times?
But your questions have already been answered.
How is that?
Yesterday, if you had not taken pity on my age and given me a hand in digging these beds, you would have been attacked by that man on your way home. Then, you would have deeply regretted not staying with me. Therefore, the most important time was the time when you were digging and making the beds in my garden. The most important person was myself, and the most important pursuit or act was to help me. Later, when the wounded man ran up to the hermitage, the most important time was the time you spent in dressing his wound. If you had not cared for him, he would have died, and you would have lost the chance to be reconciled with him. Likewise, he was the most important person, and the most important act was taking care of his wound. Remember, O King, that there is only one important time, and that is now. The present moment is the only time over which we have any control. The most important person is always the person with whom you are at the moment, who is right in front of you. Who knows if you will have dealings with any other person in the future? And lastly, the most important act or pursuit is making that person, the one who is standing there in front of you or beside you, happy. That alone is the true pursuit of life.
So, that is how the king found answers to his 3 questions. For you, a second story. Once upon a time, there was a king, and he...
Stop, dilly-dallying. Come to the point.
King Chanaka was performing a very big ritual. He was performing a yaga. For this, he convened an assembly of scholars. Great scholars of those times were invited, men of repute, intellectuals, and experts. On the day of the convention, the scholars were all seated silently, when, suddenly, into that assembly, there entered a person full of pens all over his body.
Everybody was staring at him. If he had been normal, it would have been all right.
But he had so many bends and twists all over the body.
Ashtavakra. Yes, that was his name. Ashtavakra went straight to the king.
O king, I have heard that there is a debate going on here. I wish to participate in the debate.
Such an ugly boy, and he hopes to defeat the great scholars assembled here.
This is hilarious.
Look at him. He's not even remotely self-conscious about being laughed at.
Once the people in the court stopped laughing, Ashtavakra let out an amused laugh. The people in the court looked at the laughing Ashtavakra with surprise. Finally, Ashtavakra stopped laughing.
Please be seated, O noble one. What is your name?
My name is Ashtavakra.
Ashtavakra means a body with eight bends.
You know that, don't you?
Are these the great scholars who were going to engage in a debate with me?
Ashtavakra, all these people had some reason to laugh. The reason is, your body is twisted with many bends. But I don't understand. Why did you laugh along with them?
O King, I came here because I heard that you had convened a meeting of scholars. I thought that here I will find scholars of great learning and wisdom. A court filled with great pundits. Is this not your court? Have I come to the wrong place? I do not see even one scholar here. In fact, there are only cobblers here.
What do you mean? This is an assembly of the greatest scholars of the land. Why are you calling them cobblers?
A cobbler only knows the nature of skin because he deals in skin, in leather, to make shoes. He doesn't know anything about the inner person, nor does he care to. All the people in the assembly here are looking at my outward appearance. They are looking at my skin, just as a cobbler does, and not at my heart. So, you see, O King, I laughed loudly and repeatedly, because this is not an assembly of scholars, but an assembly of cobblers. Who is a true scholar? Panditah Samadarshinah. He is a true scholar who has equal-mindedness. Where is the equal-mindedness in you all? You have come here with shawls and bracelets, but these things are not a sign of true scholarship. Remember, O people seated in this assembly, that God will never look at your scholarship. He is not bothered about your poems and compositions. God is moved only by your feelings and not by your external appearance. God sees the sanctity of your heart and nothing else. This is the teaching, the message of Ashtavakra to all of you, to the so-called scholars.
In this way, Ashtavakra taught the learned men in King Janaka's court the meaning of true scholarship. Through this story, Bhagwan tells us to open up our hearts and realize the ephemeral nature of this world. He also emphasizes on who a true scholar is.
Thank you.
for the third and last story. In a small village, there lived a poor but happy family consisting of three members: mother, father, and a daughter. Unfortunately, there was no primary school in that village, and so all the children of the village had to pass through a small wood. That is, they had to pass through a small wood to reach another big village where there was a good primary school. The daughter of the family, a sweet and innocent girl, was admitted in that school. She used to carry her lunch in a small tiffin carrier every day. One day, as the girl was passing through the woods, she saw a sick and weak old man in a dilapidated rest house. Moved by his condition, she approached him.
"Grandpa, what is the matter with you? What are you doing here, all alone in this dilapidated house? Can I help you?"
"My dear little one, I have to go to a village which is very far away."
"What happened then? And what are you doing here, Grandpa?"
"Yesterday, I suddenly fell ill. I'm too weak even to go and drink water from the pond nearby."
"Oh no! Have you eaten anything?"
"I have not eaten anything since yesterday."
The girl was moved by the old man's condition. Without a second thought, she gave the food from her lunch box to the man. She fetched water from the pond and gave him some water to drink. Then she left for school. The next day, she brought some food for the old man in a separate packet and fetched water for him to drink. She continued to lovingly serve this old man for full 7 days. On the 7th day, when the girl was returning from the school, he called her.
"My dear, I'm feeling much better in health and spirit. I feel I'm strong enough now to walk and reach my village. I'm really grateful to you, my daughter, for the loving service you have rendered to me. But tell me the truth. How could you manage to procure the food for me every day? Have you taken the permission of your parents before offering it to me?"
"Grandpa, I never do anything without the permission of my parents. It is they who taught me to help the sick and the needy. But let me tell you how I was able to get the food for you every day. You see, there is a big fruit tree in this forest. A lot of small but sweet fruits fall down from the tree early in the morning. While going to the school, I picked up the fruits and took them with me these last few days. I sold the fruits to my friends and to whoever was willing to buy them. With the money I thus collected, I bought food for you."
"Oh, Is that so?
So you see, I neither stole the food nor money from my house. Are you satisfied now, Grandpa?
Of course I am. You've brought me much comfort and joy. I don't have words to express my thankfulness to you.
I was happy to be of some help to you, Grandpa. You don't have to thank me. Now, let me wish you a happy journey back home.
Before leaving the forest, the old man prayed to the Lord.
Oh God, I'm not rich enough to help this loving girl or her parents. But you are all-knowing and all-merciful. Dear Lord, please bless the girl and her parents in a manner you think best.
After a few days, an old man knocked on the door of the house of the girl.
The father opened the door and welcomed the guest into his poor and small house.
Sir, I presume you are the father of the girl who goes to school in the next village. You must have heard from your daughter about an old and ailing man in the dilapidated rest house in the woods. I am that old man. I have no words to express my gratitude to you and to your daughter. You must be really proud of your kind and good-hearted daughter. I have come to offer my gratitude to you. It is my wish that you accept this token of my gratitude for the service that she did to me. Please take this money that I have brought. I want you to use the money for your daughter's education.
O revered one, please understand. We may be poor, but we cannot accept money from a stranger, and especially for service rendered by our daughter. What value will that service have if we take money in return? Kindly understand our feelings. But please wait. Let me give you something to drink.
The father went inside to fetch some juice.
When he came out with a tumbler of juice, the old man was nowhere to be seen.
He saw the bag of money he had left behind.
He looked this way and that way for the man, but he was nowhere to be seen.
He called out to his wife.
What shall we do? The old man has left behind a bag of money. We don't even know his address.
My dear, let us make good use of the money. It must be God's will that we do some service. Let us spend the money for the education of children like our daughter. Let us feed those who are poorer than us.
It was God who had come in the form of the old man to bless the good and kind-hearted girl and her parents.
And why did he do that? Because they practiced his divine commandment, "Thou shalt feed the poor and serve the sick."
If we truly love Bhagwan, it is necessary that we follow his teachings. To show that we adore and worship him, we have to put our Divine Master's words into practice in our lives. That would, indeed, be the best way to pay homage to the one who was the greatest teacher the world has ever seen. A loving Lord who gave of himself so selflessly, who gave so much to us and asked for nothing in return except our love and devotion. Bhagwan exhorts us to love all, serve all. To love and serve all tells us to give up our pride and arrogance and walk on the path of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, and Ahimsa.
Satya Dharma Mu Shanti Prema Lato Mi Nitya Jivana Yatra Saginchu Jiva.
Satya Dharma Mu Shanti Prema Lato Mi Nitya Jivana Yatra Saginchu.
Shabbat.